Chuck, I think you're on in charge of this session.
That's crazy talk.
I know. I'm just warning you, since I know you're gone for a week, or two, whatever it's been. However long you've been gone.
Sometimes it feels long. I mean, it was a week with a 3.5-year-old. So
that would feel like a month old.
If I start singing, I have Play-Doh stuck in weird spots.
When you're away, you don't have to do things.
Exactly.
All right.
Nathan, are we...
Yes, sir.
We're on.
All right. All right, we're going to go ahead and call our meeting to order. This is a meeting of the Fire EMS Assistance Advisory Group. And to begin, let's go ahead and just approve the minutes from the last meeting. I don't know if there was any additions or corrections. I was not at the last meeting, so I've got none.
It was just a work session.
So excellent.
I think we can...
Good. So we'll go ahead and say that those are adopted.
By consensus.
Yeah, by consensus. And then for the purposes of our guests who are here today, maybe we could do some self-introductions real quick so you know who's here. We'll also ask everybody who's in the room to introduce themselves real quick. And if they have a title or an affiliation, that would be great. I'm Chuck Daldorf. I'm the chair of the Fire EMS Citizens Advisory Group.
Rick Fraser, also one of the Citizens Advisory Group members.
George Johnson, I'm the Citizens Advisory Group.
Nathan Butler, I'm Administrative Support.
Mark Tompkins, I'm the Citizens Advisory Group.
Dan Paulson, Citizens Advisory Group.
Dr. Sullivan. Mike Sullivan, County Medical Director and ED Director. Be silent.
Go ahead and start.
Olivia Hoslow, one of the ER physicians, and then the supervising physician for Salem Island.
Warren Appleton, Board of Commissioners, Public Health District. Thank you.
Carolyn Augusta, citizen of the district.
Sharon Visco, editor of Salmon Island.
I'm Lisa Lindstrom, Public Hospital District Commissioner.
Pamela Hutchins, Superintendent of Salmon County Public Hospital District,
Central 1. Carl, I'm interim chief for Salmon Island.
Will Hamilton, with Island.
Right,
Cardinale
Fire
Commission.
Aaron Graham, EMD,
with
Salem Island EMS,
Captain
with
Salem
Fire.
Scott Williams, Fire Chief, Works 7.
Norman Collins, Fire Chief for Salem Island Fire.
Great. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to ask Rick if Rick would go ahead and make introductions of our guests and kind of talk to us a little bit about the purpose of us all getting together this afternoon.
Sure. So, as a citizens advisory group, and many of you are aware of it, we've been trying to really talk with representatives of the community, of the healthcare organizations, of the combining organizations that are coming together. And quite frankly, in looking at this and having the opportunity to look at it all across the country, EMS and fire organizations. One of my concerns and one of my challenges in looking at this is assuring that at the end of the day, no matter what happens, what I call medicine really is assured that it gets the view that it needs to. It has the it's capable of doing the job that it needs to do. And I think everybody has done very well. But to kind of emphasize that, I felt like who better than from the state of Washington get the Department of Health EMS team up here. And so I'd like to introduce Katie Holstein. Katie is the director for EMS within the Department of Health for the state. And then Jason Norris also works with Katie. And I felt like it was important to get their viewpoints, to understand how the state looks at these things and what is potentially our issues, things that at the end of the day, if we make recommendations, we're at least the most knowledgeable to make those recommendations, and we understand hopefully all of the parameters and all those kinds of things. So the five board members, and actually I guess we didn't I apologize. But Dan, Mark, George, Chuck and I felt like having Katie come up and then actually getting her here, because all the government's in, and so they're very busy doing things, but they were so gracious to actually come up on Kenmore for a day and visit with us, which I really felt it was great. So with that, Katie, I'm going to turn it over to you. Just before I do that, so our intent is that for the five Citizens Advisory Group, that we'll be able to ask our questions to try to make certain that we've covered everything as we go into the document. As everybody's aware, kind of our deadline is March 31st, so we're a month away, panicking and a month away. So we'll do that, and then we'll open it up because, you know, for I think what's, you know, very important when I look at the crowd that's here right now, with both the representatives from the hospital district board, from the representative of the fire district board, from really the two chiefs that are part of the system here, you're all integral kind of to what's going on right now. And then we're fortunate enough to have the program medical director for the county and the designee for the EMS system here. We've got Scott, who is Orcus Fire, who has a similar system over there. And one of the things we've been looking at is kind of a comparative of Scott's system versus kind of what is going to be reassembled here, because at one time it was assembled. And so we have really all of the key individuals as part of this group. So you need to ask your questions too, especially to understand that at the end of the day, we're doing what's best for the residents of the island and ensuring that healthcare delivery for those folks are here. So with that in mind, okay, sure. Thanks.
And the only other caveat is we're going to be also keeping an eye on time because we have to be respectful of some travel and logistics issues. So that's the only caveat to our discussion this afternoon. So thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting the Department of Health to participate in this work. My name is Katie Holstein. As Rick had indicated, the Islanders have been very hospitable to us today, so thank you very much for that. It's nice to see the island. I think if you're going to be a regulator, you need to understand and have perspective of who you're regulating. So it's very helpful for us to come up and see some of the nuances and the geographical considerations. I've been with the Department of Health for about 5 years. Prior to that, I was a paramedic. I started on the East Coast right out of high school and finished my paramedic career in Washington here. Moved into regulation because I was very frustrated with the regulations not keeping up with the need to innovate our profession so that we could provide the best care. So that's why I went to the Department of Health. Once I was there, it was retirement time for the majority of the EMS team, so we literally had a complete retirement of all our EMS staff at the Department of Health within a year of me being there. So I handpicked some of the individuals that I work with now from the community that I had known over a long period of time, one of which is Jason. And I'll give Jason the opportunity to introduce himself. So at the Department of Health, we manage, in our section, we manage the EMS Regional Councils, which I'll talk a little bit about today because some of their work intersects with some of your work. We manage and work with the medical program directors. We manage education and training for the paramedics and EMS responders in our state. We manage all the legislation and the rule that comes our way, so WAC and rulemaking is my responsibility, as is doing bill analysis and participating in legislative activities. I can certainly inform you of what we're seeing this year, and I certainly will advise you of some of the things we've seen in the last couple of years. We also manage our state EMS committees at a state level, and we do license and verify your EMS services and certify providers. And we also perform discipline when necessary, so we are the regulators. EMS and trauma is a system, and if you're changing components of your system at a local level, you will impact the system and be impacted by the system. So I think part of our conversation today will be, you know, how is the system configured? What's the regulatory framework? What are some best practices you should consider moving forward? What are some of the processes you need to be aware of? And I think understanding the macro environment in EMS is very critical to your work here. Because if you're disconnected from what's occurring both nationally and at a state level, It may catch you off guard when we start prescribing things. You're like, where did this come from? Why didn't we get to participate? So I will talk a little bit about that. So Jason, you want to talk a little bit about what you do?
Okay. So Jason Norris. I've been with the Department of Health since April 2016. Prior to that, paramedic in the Pierce County area from 98 until 2016. Still currently a paramedic. For the state, I basically oversee the agency licenses and verifications. So I work with all of the EMS agencies when they have questions, they want to upgrade, they want to get a new license, they want to downgrade, they want to change something. They give me a call and I work with them on those types of things. And I also perform the on-site reviews for those agencies when they have those changes, the upgrades and the initials.
So I thought I would take a few minutes talking to you a little bit about the regulatory framework, the different components of the EMS and trauma care system, some of the roles and responsibilities for the Department of Health, state strategic planning, some of the current work and projects that we have, trends and challenges, and then open it up for discussion. And all of this is to provide some background and context to your work. So I have a few slides that I think will take us through some points of discussion. So those of you who have been in the system for quite some time, you know, in the 1980s is when the statutory environment, our legislators came together and decided there shall be an EMS and trauma care system. The intent of that system was to assure that we got the right patient to the right facility in the right amount of time. So the first legislation that we saw was in 1971, and initially that was to establish paramedic certification. Shortly after that, the EMT certification and the need for EMS services to be licensed to support that work was legislated. And then in the 1980s, they established regional councils. The importance of regional councils is that they are a body that has statutory authority for distribution of resources. So when you're starting to talk about consolidations and mergers, there is a whole set of statutory framework around mergers and consolidations with licensure that Jason will have to provide some technical guidance to the agencies involved in that in order to get them through that process. With regional councils, we also provide them funding from the general fund to do their work, to do regional planning. So that's a critical component of the system. Once those parts were established, some of the partners in the system had learned that it's expensive to do trauma care. And if we're going to do trauma care, we need more money to do this. And so the legislature assigned, passed the Trauma Care Act, the Study Act, to study the problem of trauma. And by trauma, that's motor vehicle collisions and trauma to the body. That's really what that frame was at the time. And they came back and said, it costs this much money to do trauma care, and we're going to need this much money and these parts of the system in order to make this work. And that's when we saw the Trauma Care Fund Act, which funded trauma care, so we pay trauma hospitals a stipend to do that. We pay EMS services a small stipend. That's where your funding for the medical program director comes from. Much of that is legislated funding. That funding is not only from the general fund, but we also get some stipend from license fees and dealer fees. So that's where some of the money to support your trauma system comes from. After the trauma system was implemented, in 2010, we decided, well, trauma's great. We've reduced morbidity and mortality. We're doing really good work. But now we're seeing some problems with cardiac and stroke, so we'd like to follow the model of the trauma system and implement cardiac and stroke. So the legislature heard, and they passed the Cardiac and Stroke Act. However, it's voluntary, so there's no funding associated with that. So we only have a 0.25 FTE at the Department of Health that manages stroke and cardiac hospital categorization and programs. So that's a body of work that you're seeing in your macro political environment right now around trying to find some funding for cardiac and stroke system to support that. One of the unique aspects about our system is that we were the first in the nation to have a trauma system in our legislation. We are also the only system in the nation to have injury prevention and rehabilitation in our legislation. So it's a continuum of care that's required. The legislature said there shall be injury prevention, there shall be EMS, there shall be trauma hospitals, and there shall be rehabilitation. So it's a full continuum of care that's supported in our system. We also have the trauma registry, so we measure information and we gather data from the trauma registry, and our epidemiologists look at that, and that's how we plan on improving our system, by looking at what the data is telling us. Some of the roles and responsibilities that we have at the Department of Health are listed on this slide. Of course, you know that we do a lot more activities at the department, but for EMS, we do a lot of these activities here. And we have a few staff members that are divided to do this work for us. In our EMS system in general, in 2017 and 2018, this is licensed and verified EMS services. So on average, we have around 500 to 550 licensed and verified EMS ambulance services across the state, which is, there's quite a few. Compared to other states, we have more than some other states. Providers, we average, and this is all levels of care, this is your EMTs and your paramedics and those little in-between levels, we have an average of 16,000. The trends that we're seeing with our EMS resources is we're seeing a decline in volunteers, and we're seeing the EMS services in rural areas either close their doors and go away or go part-time, and we're also seeing a lot of mergers and consolidations. So it's a natural evolution. You know, we want to create economies of scale and support that. So those are a couple of trends we're seeing. For your trauma services, they're pretty stable. We haven't seen many trauma services, and these are hospitals that are designated to do trauma care. We haven't seen a lot of fluctuation up or down in the system for trauma services, but this is just an idea of how many we have statewide. And I think your hospital here is a level 4, correct? And your hospital here also, at this time, doesn't do cardiac or stroke. So most of your patients for cardiac and stroke are going off the island, right? Okay. So we do have a tool that you can use for your planning when you get to that point. It's a GIS map, and the GIS map will give you the idea of all of your EMS services, all of your hospitals in your region. We'll give you access to that so you can use that for your planning when you get to that point. But this is to sort of show the distribution of trauma services across the state. Just a quick snapshot to show that. Rehabilitation centers, that's an area that we struggle finding trauma rehab centers, but there is data to support that they're necessary so that someone who's experienced traumatic injury can receive that rehabilitation and go back out into the community and be as functional as possible. Cardiac and stroke being voluntary, we do have a number of cardiac and stroke designated facilities across the state. And again, this mapping system that Jason has put together for you, you can use this mapping system, it's digital, to look at all of your services, where your EMS stations are, zoom into your county, see your trauma response areas by district. It's a great resource for you for your planning. So I just wanted to show you that we did have that for you. So this slide, although it's a little complicated, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes so that you understood how we do our work. In our state, we work from the bottom up instead of the top down. Now, in some states across the nation, the Department of Health or their regulatory authority will say, you know, you shall do this, thank you very much. In our state, it's very different. It's the bottom up. The citizens are coming to us and saying, this is what we would like. So a lot of times they're thinking, we hear, well, why don't you, the Department of Health, you know, change this law? Or why don't you change this rule? Well, we don't do any of that until you tell us that that's what you want. And so it's a bottom-up approach. So a lot of times we're waiting for the citizens to come to us and ask us questions or lead that change. It's usually not us leading the change. So that's a different dynamic for us in our state. That's the political environment we have in EMS. As a result, our state has a lot of advisory committees, and we have several layers in our system that have regulation around them that you need to be conscientious of when you start merging and consolidating. So legislation says the Department of Health shall be the government agency responsible for oversight of all the regulations in Washington related to EMS and trauma. And they shall have a steering committee, and that steering committee shall be comprised of a cross-discipline number of people from healthcare, different healthcare environments, different EMS environments, the public, different associations. They used to be appointed by the governor until 2008. Now they're appointed by the Secretary of Health. And that steering committee meets bimonthly, and they're the ones that advise the Department of Health on all final changes on rule, sometimes bill analysis, any policy changes we make, like Rick with the air ambulance plan. that had to go to the Trauma Steering Committee. If you have license changes in your community that are going to impact your regional plan, they have to go to the Steering Committee for approval. So the Steering Committee is our advisory committee. Under the Steering Committee, we have a number of technical advisory committees because they can't possibly do all the work in Washington for EMS. So we have a cost TAC, we have pre-hospital, hospital TAC, we have rehabilitation, we have injury prevention. All aspects of the system have their own technical advisory committee, and we work on the state EMS and trauma triage, or the state EMS and trauma plan, the strategic plan. And these committees get together with volunteers like yourself that come to the table, and they participate in all this state work. So the top layer there you see is our advisory layer. We typically don't write anything in policy unless we have engaged our stakeholders in the conversation about it. Most often, we don't see people from rural areas contributing to that work, which is unfortunate, so we always encourage you to participate in these meetings. We do have webinar capabilities. In the past, they used to pay people to come to our meetings. Now we don't do that anymore. but we certainly do have webinars, so participate in those meetings. It's very helpful. The second layer of the system we call the operation or planning layer, and this is statutory requirements. Our regional councils are contracted by the Department of Health. We pay them money, and that money is to support their work in regional planning. And the regional plans are a document that they create that says, these are the challenges in our region. This is how we're going to address those challenges. This is the number of EMS services we need in our region. This is who has the licenses for those services. And that regional plan is really important, so if you're going to consolidate or merge, you're going to have to consider amending the regional plan if it doesn't allow the flexibility for you to do that. Now, you and your county fall within the North Region. Therefore, Martina Nichols would be your point of contact with the regional council, and of course, I would include Jason in correspondence so he can ensure that you manage that. The EMS regions are also responsible for promulgating what's called patient care procedures, which is an operational guidance document that tells EMS how they're supposed to move patients and when and to where. And so those patient care procedures are relatively broad, but it's important to know because they're a statutory requirement. So there's a lot of work in the plan around patient care procedures. That's more in Dr. Sullivan's lane. Those patient care procedures impact local EMS councils and your county operating procedures and any protocols that for patient care that Dr. Sullivan will write. The bottom layer of this system is the clinical layer, and this is where we have medical program directors. Now, MPDs, medical program directors, are also legislated. The legislation says there shall be a medical program director. The Department of Health shall appoint and certify and contract with and provide a stipend for that medical program director. So the department is responsible for appointing the MPD, and we work with that person to provide oversight for our EMS agencies and responders. And, of course, you can ask questions, but you can hold them till the end, too. So if you have a question, please feel free to raise your hand and let me know. I thought it would be important for your work to know what our state strategic plan is. Right now, for the period of 2018 through 2021, the EMS and Trauma Care Steering Committee has crafted this vision and this mission. So for the next 4 years, this is what they'll be working towards within the framework of what they're working towards. It's very broad. Here's some of the challenges and priorities that they've identified. So much of the work that we have in our strategic plan is based around these challenges and priorities, many of which I think you probably experience here, and probably some that are on this slide that you experience here. So the goals for the plans, which are the individual strategies, are written by the technical advisory committees, but the goals are to increase access to care, you know, prepare for public health emergencies. We've seen a lot of emergence of active shooter kinds of incidents or mass casualty, mass patient incidents. There's been some emphasis around preparing for public health emergency, highly infectious diseases, another one that we've seen. We also want to continue injury and violence prevention, promoting better QI, improving our quality assurance, and sustainability. And the sustainability of the system is really critical. those of you who work in EMS know that the reimbursement for EMS is simply insufficient. And it's very difficult for EMS to be sustainable without a taxable function or taxable structure to support it, because the reimbursement is just insufficient. So most of our strategic planning has to do with these goals. So if you're going to create strategies, you know, aligning those with those goals of the state system is always nice to do. Not required, but at least you know what we're working on. And if there is, if we seek funding outside of what's allowed in legislation, if we seek grant funding or regional funding, those opportunities will have to be aligned with these priorities. And so a lot of times we'll have extra grant funding, but we have to use it within this framework. Here's a picture that shows the different regions in Washington State. This is how we divide the EMS and trauma care regions. We have 8 regions. And again, you all fall in the north region. We contract with that regional council. We provide them some funding, and they hire an executive director. That person is Martina Nichols. And they manage the EMS and trauma care regional plan. So what do the regions do? Well, it's really important for you to know that they identify and how services are supposed to be distributed. So this is a certificate of need concept based on needs. So if you're going to change your licensure to increase the number of EMS services you have, or to change how you are managing that current system, you'll have to do a comprehensive needs assessment that will be required in order for us to change the regional plan. So be thinking about that body of work and what that would look like. And Jason can provide you some guidance and some examples of what other regions have put together. Those two slides are for another. So just to give you an example of what it looks, what strategic planning may look like, I thought I would share some of the strategies that we have for the pre-hospital technical advisory committee. Essentially, for the pre-hospital technical advisory committee, our strategies are around improving data. Those of you who are following legislation, you know that the governor has proposed an opioid bill. And in that bill, there's a provision that makes the data submission to WMCIS mandatory for EMS. And that's really critical for us to be able to measure our outcomes and our performance. So if you're interested in QI, we do really well with measuring QI for hospitals for trauma. But we don't do as well measuring QI for EMS, because there's a state registry that's not mandated, so it's voluntary. So only about 60% of our EMS services report to that data registry, and there's not sufficient data in there for us to do a lot of analysis yet. So one of the strategies is for us to improve data for EMS so we can use it for policymaking and for initiatives at local levels like you're working on. We also have a lot of strategies around EMS education, particularly EMS education that impacts rural communities. We're looking for ways to reduce the burden. We're looking for ways to improve access to rural communities for education. The clinical standards objective is really medical program directors. This year for us, it was we are amending our state scope of practice for EMS. And that just includes some of the skills they can do and some of the procedures they can do are changing because of the national framework is changing. There isn't anything major in that, but that is the body of work that they're doing. And so these other objectives, we made some updates to our state air medical plan, which is a plan that talks about how we utilize air medical services in our state. Island Air was a great partner for us in that work and contributed to that work. As a fixed-wing service, they bring a different lens to that body of work, so that was very helpful for us to hear some of the challenges with the community here through the lens of Island Air. We also we're doing rulemaking, and I'm going to talk separately a little bit about rulemaking. Rulemaking is your Washington State Administrative Code, and our rules are open right now, so we're amending them. And it's really critical if you want to participate in that work to know how to plug into that and contribute to that. So I'll talk about rulemaking because it's changing some of the standards for licensing. They won't necessarily impact the work that you're getting ready to embark upon, because I don't imagine it will be done before 2020. But it certainly will, in the future, change our standards a little. And then we certainly want to know how EMS can contribute to work in public health, you know, making sure that we're available to use our resources where we can. So our expectations with the strategic planning period that we have is that we would accomplish some of these things listed here. And these are broad, overarching concepts. Of course, you know, there's a lot more detail, but it's not necessary in this forum for us to go into that. So we've talked about the EMS system components, continuity of care, how we're legislated, how we're funded, that we designate categorized facilities, and we've talked a little bit about the advisory committees and their work. I want to talk a little bit about legislation that's been implemented in the last couple of years because it impacts all of us when that happens. And I can certainly advise you of some of the bills that we've seen this year so far. So we'll start with 2016. In 2016, we saw a law passed that allowed EMS to transport patients from the field directly to chemical dependency and mental health facilities. I know access to those facilities up here is limited, but in the past, you should know that EMS was only allowed to transport from the field directly to a recognized facility, which in our law is a hospital. Not an urgent care, not a mental health facility, not any of those. It was to the hospital. So this law allowed EMS to do that. We had to write some guidelines for them to do that, and we've done that, and that body of work is completed. So if you're looking at optimizing your resources, it's certainly an opportunity for you to consider consulting with DSHS or DOH to find if there's a need up here for new facilities of that type, or to petition EMS to be able to transport patients to places other than an ED, if you have that. It's a good consideration of resource because there's some legal framework that supports that. The second law we saw in 2016 came from Engross Substitute Bill 5591, and this was fire services to create types of community paramedic. Many of you have probably heard the term community paramedic. Community paramedic programs are programs that do three things. One, they reduce the misuse of EMS. So they implement dispatch triage lines to triage patients to different facilities before they call EMS to the scene, or they go out and fix somebody's ramp or address a social service or get another resource involved so that patient is not utilizing the system for low acuity calls. The second type of program that we see for community paramedic are programs that reduce the misuse of transports to the emergency room. 1721 or alternative destination is one. Is one way to reduce the misuse of emergency room resources. And we see plenty of pilot programs in our area now in regards to how else EMS can be used to reduce transports to the emergency room. The third type of community paramedic program we're seeing are programs where EMS is partnering with hospitals to reduce readmission rates back to the hospital. All of those activities were allowed under this law. The important part for you to know is that prior to this law, the scope of practice for EMS prohibited this kind of activity because the scope of practice in our law for EMS includes environment. And the environment is a pre-hospital emergent environment. So EMS working in hospitals is prohibited. EMS working outside of an ambulance is prohibited. So this is the only law that allows them to work within this very narrow provision outside of that pre-hospital emergent environment. If we want EMS to work in the hospital, if we want EMS to work in a different environment, it would need to be a legislated change. That would need to be something that comes from legislature. In 2017, we saw the act passed in regards to EMS needing training for persons with disabilities on the scene of an emergency. So those of you who are in EMS, you saw a curriculum was developed. We were required to work with other agencies to develop a curriculum. That's extra training that you will have to do as a result of that law. And any of you who are interested in the history, you can ask on the side. We can have a discussion on where that came from and why it is if you're interested in the background. They also, the fire services decided, well, if we're going to do CARES programs, we want to be reimbursed for those. So they're working with the healthcare authority right now to establish a payment process, a reimbursement process for CARES programs. That work isn't completed yet, so we're still working with healthcare authority on implementing that. And then it also, in rural areas, a law passed in our law the current the previous state was that in order for you to have an EMS service, you had to staff it with at least two EMTs. This law allowed rural areas to use non-medically trained drivers with the approval from the department. So if you're in a rural area, you can use non-medically trained drivers and one EMT on your ambulance. And Jason is managing that program, so he can tell you more about that if you're interested. But in a critical access area such as this, that might be a program you're interested in knowing more about. We also saw in 2018, we saw that credentialing for military spouse, this was interesting for us. That bill did not pass, but it was key for us to see it because it didn't require a medical program director for EMS, and it didn't require EMS service. And it was only that one particular incident. So it didn't pass legislation, didn't pass out of the House, but it was concerning to us because we understand that there's a need, but the way that our legislation works, we require medical oversight because EMS is not an independent practitioner. They're just not. They'll always have to have medical oversight. So that was a little concerning for us. And then the governor opioid bill didn't pass last year, but it's in session again this year, and it includes the same provisions as we saw before, which is the mandate, the EMS report to data. For this year, we saw two bills, and the only one I'm going to mention is one that I know moved out of committee. The others I don't think are worth mentioning, but I have the list here if you'd like to see it, because they didn't move out of committee. And the cutoff, the first cutoff is here. But the first bill that we saw this year was Senate Bill 5208 in regards to EMS animals. This is for EMS providing care to animals while on the scene of an emergency. It allows them to provide basic care to animals like give oxygen, CPR, just support an animal if they're at a fire or something like that, and gives them indemnity to do so. So that's one bill that we saw. And the other one that passed out of committee was Senate Bill 5211. This is a bill that prohibits the use of training on live animals in paramedic training programs. So those are the only two that passed out of committee. So those were worth mentioning for you if you're tracking that kind of thing. I do have the list up here if you're interested in seeing it.